Welcome to the Enneagram 2.0 podcast. My name is Uranio Pais, and today our theme is activating the head center, the Enneagram's head center. Once more, I'm recording this video without my good friend Beatrice Chestnut, because she's in Egypt. I'm recording this while she's in Egypt and still taking a much deserved time off, both in that wonderful trip with Russ Hudson, all around Egypt, exploring the origins of the Enneagram, and also taking a few, like 2 or 3 days after that, before both of us travel to China to teach there. So I don't know exactly when this episode will air, but I needed to record one more by request from our team at CP, in case it gets difficult for B and I to record an episode while we are in China. So I wanted to talk to all of you about the head center's development, because as a head type myself, perhaps, there is something that bothers me, that sometimes it's almost like people who do inner work, including teachers, indirectly imply that inner work and self-development is way more about the heart. Like, forget your head and work on your heart, open your heart. And while that is definitely central, very important, and in my view, the most important thing, because we use the head too much, and the heart being open, many beautiful, important things happen. While that is true, at the same time, there is very, very important work to be done on the head center. And I mean, for all 9 types, including head types 5, 6, and 7. And it's important to understand what this kind of work on the head center is. What does it include? How to do work on that? And why that is important. So this is what I wanted to talk to all of you about. And at this point, most probably you all know that in the Enneagram, we talk about 3 main centers of intelligence: the gut, the heart, and the head. So 8s, 9s, and 1s are more based in the gut, 2s, 3s, and 4s on the heart, and 5s, 6s, and 7s on the head. But that's because in the ego formation process, they have allowed one center to become dominant, and instead of keeping all 3 open. And naturally, 8s, 9s, 1s, 2s, 3s, and 4s, body types and heart types, don't use the head as much as their dominant centers. And at the same time, the 5s, 6s, and 7s overuse the head. However, there are layers of the use of the head capacity, the mind's capacity, layers of sophistication, actually, on how we all use the head and our minds. And this is important for all types. And we are talking about a head center for any of us. And the head center, in this case, is mostly the lower head center, as we call it, which is the human brain and all the natural mental processes we engage with. Like, for instance, reasoning, right? There is also the higher mental center, which exists in potential for us human beings when we get to a very amazing level of awareness in what we called level 5 in our episodes, previous episodes on the levels of awareness. Have a look at those if you want to know more. So the higher mental center has completely different faculties than the lower mental center. I will mention something here about that, but I'll concentrate vastly on the lower mental center, meaning the functions of our head. So that is what I want to talk about. And there is so much to say. We all have all three centers, and we need to use each of them wisely for the right tasks and in slightly more sophisticated ways. Like, we can be using the head center right now in a more shallow way, and we can go deeper and deeper and deeper and get into a more sophisticated usage of the mind's capacity, right? So what is the most basic use of the head? It's what Gurdjieff, who was the main pioneer of the Enneagram, the first one to bring the Enneagram to the West, he called formative center. Formative center. It's the most mechanical part of the lower head center. So it's the most basic use of the head. And unfortunately, so many people today in our societies use almost only that part. It's extremely mechanical. And that is using the head, but it's very shallow. It's the outermost part of the head center. And then we need to go in, and make better use of the innermost parts of the head center. So what is the formative center, and why is it very shallow and very limited, very mechanical? Well, the formative center is the one that just repeats information after getting them without much critical spirit and without much reasoning, and like sayings that are, you know, appealing, or more recently, fake news. It's very easy to just trust them and go along with them, and making affirmations that are very appealing, but have we really thought about those? We see that a lot in politics, but also in all the division that exists today in society, right? And everything that that is behind algorithms in social media is based in the formative center, because the formative center can be very easily manipulated. And that's because it's a very limited use of the mind. Then we have also things like confirmation bias. We don't want to be challenged in our ways of thinking when it comes to the formative center, that more shallow use of the mind. And that area, which is actually more like the more mechanical part of the brain, that is important for some things. Like, for instance, if you're learning math, and you are trying to memorize something like the multiplication table in math, then that is the right part of the brain, in my view, to use that. You understand the thing, it makes sense to you, but then, you know, for such operation, for such thing, it's good to just memorize it, because it will be helpful for you in the future. But then what people do is to use the formative center for most things in life. They use like memorization processes, and also just repetition without thinking about it, and just going along with whatever is said to them, or going against no matter what is happening. Like a definite opposition based in what? Based in judgment, based in prejudices. So the formative center works that way. It's almost like a computer, like yes or no, zero or one. So it's very, very basic. And as I said, a very big number, scary big number of people in society use almost only that dimension of the head. So how to get out of that? It's a lot about questioning yourself, about trying to see how you may be wrong, and try to see how there are other ways of thinking. Try to think a little bit more out of the box, right? But before that, there is something about being able to reason. So reasoning and trying to make sense of things. Like when you are reading a text and you're trying to interpret what the person's trying to say and all the meanings, you need to think. It's not that easy. This more mechanical part of the brain cannot do it all. So there is this other side of trying to make sense of things out of connecting thoughts and, you know, putting them in a sequence and making sense of cause and consequence. So the more the basic process of reasoning, which is already less basic than those, you know, very blind affirmations of the formative center. So this is a second level of the brain development. It's learning how to reason. And the third thing is what I said before, thinking out of the box, like thinking differently. And thinking differently here, according to your type. So for a one, thinking differently is not thinking about rules or about what is wrong, and going to think of new ideas instead of saying what is the right way. But if you are a seven, then thinking differently is actually not thinking differently, which means sevens try to think of different hypotheses and thinking in all possible different ways. So thinking out of the box for a seven means stick with one thought. So it's doing it differently than you are used to. Like engaging in a discussion with someone in which you have a stance, and then all of a sudden trying to go to the other person's shoes, put yourself on the other person's shoes, and then start discussing, taking the other person's point of view. Like not believing that you are right that easily. And that is a trademark of people who are more sophisticated. They don't have as much certainty about stuff, right? So more mature people, more evolved people, at least in that level two that we talked about in our models of level in episodes here in the past, those people can already question themselves and be less arrogant in not just trying to prove themselves right. And they can think that they may be wrong. What if I'm not seeing something, right? So that is using the brain in a more sophisticated way. And that implies opening up space in the brain for new things to be accessed, for new manifestations, for new information, for new data. And then there is something interesting that happens, which is I don't stick in a very rigid way to any kind of idea or even ideology. I am open to thinking and rethinking things all the time. I'm not stuck in whatever way of thinking I have or ideas or what I back up in life. So that I don't run the risk of just repeating myself or doing or thinking or stating more of the same. So that is yet another way of developing ourselves mentally. And for each type, there are tendencies. We may want to talk here a little bit about the focus of attention per type, which has to do with things we end up thinking or believing. So eights go a lot to injustice, domination. The nines pay attention to external demands and not internal ones. Ones pay attention to errors, mistakes, and what is not right. Then twos pay more attention to other people's needs. Threes pay more attention to tasks, accomplishment, goals, and also image. Then 4s, pay more attention to what's absent, what's missing. 5s, pay more attention in information, knowledge. And then 6s, to risks, threats. And 7s, pay attention to opportunities and different ideas. So this is very summarized and a little bit simplistic because there are other things to say also per subtype. But in this particular focus of attention, we need to learn how to mentally place attention in other things, like an 8, not looking only at injustices and paying attention to other things, or a 5, giving up just trying to gather information and hoard information. So going for pure relationships in which you are not learning anything and more. So this is also brain development. And I'm talking about something here that makes us use the brain more, because we build new neuron connections. We build more capacity of using other parts of the brain. And this relates to what is commonly explained as we use just a fraction of the brain's capacity. When we use just the formative center, or when we use just basic reasoning. So the idea here is to sophisticate the use of the brain. According to your type, there are different ways to do that, right? So first the formative center, then better reasoning, not just affirmations, then thinking out of the box. But then you have creative thinking, like creating something new that hasn't been done before, like having a new idea that comes from the understanding of things before, like going a step ahead that other people have gone before you, like creating a new theory out of a new understanding of things, or creating a new piece of art that is more like something that hasn't been done or is more creative, or, you know, writing the lyrics of a song and the melody of a song in a way that is really different and new, having a new idea, but an idea that needs to still be called yours. It's still using the lower mental center or the human brain, only that in a larger capacity of it. It's getting more and more sophisticated. So creation of things, inventions, and new understandings of things, new correlations that we couldn't see before. So building bridges between things. And that is more creative thinking. And then getting to something beautiful called complexity, which has to do with understanding things from all perspectives in the most complex way that is fascinating. And that has to do also with embracing paradoxes, embracing the fact that things change all the time. That is also more sophisticated. It's a better use of the head center. And then it goes up to a moment that you are using the head center pretty well, pretty, you know, in a vast way in all its capacities. And then you can potentially, if you are developing also spiritually, you can potentially open up the higher mental center. There is a lot that needs to be done to get there. It's not easy, but it's possible. And when opening the higher mental center, you really start getting ideas coming from objective reality. You start seeing the invisible but more real reality for what it really is. You start seeing universal laws. You start seeing how things really work in the spiritual realm. And you get in touch with what? The holy ideas. You get in touch with those understandings of life from a divine perspective, what greater reality is. And that can't be called our ideas in any way, shape, or form. It's just like our extended brain, which is no longer ours, actually. It's getting in touch with a global brain, understanding something that doesn't start or finish in us. That is a more divine quality of creation, how things really work in that much, much deeper state of being, right? But in order to get there, we need to re-examine our fixations. And we did good episodes in the past here on Enneagram 2.0 talking about fixations. And so the fixations are very specific, one per type. Like for type 8, the fixation is vengeance. Like everything needs to have a payback. And I need to correct what's wrong and go against whoever is unfair and defend who's being wronged. So trying to think of things about that. And the fixation is a thought, not necessarily an action, although it usually leads to an action, but it's more like the mental pattern. And then for nines, it's indolence, which is making myself less and not engaging with what is really important right now, and just, you know, not attributing the right value to the thing that is most important, many times myself in the picture. Then resentment is the fixation for ones, which is, I do everything right and those other people are having fun. So I'm resentful and I'm thinking that things are not fair. And only later that engages my heart in anger, which is the passion. So the fixation almost precedes the passion. It's what leads later to the passion, right? That's another useful understanding in my view. Then the fixation for twos, flattery. Or a better word, perhaps, adulation, meaning I need to impact the other person positively, make the other person feel good with me so that I'm on top of the relationship here. Then vanity for threes. In our view, that is the fixation, according to Ichaso, and we agree with that, because vanity here has another particular meaning of I am vain in thinking that I am central for everything to happen. I think of myself as being central, of moving the world. And if I'm not there, nothing happens, right? Plus a vanity of how I strategize being seen in my image. Then melancholy for force, which is like thinking of what's missing, even if nothing's missing. Then I go to the past and I remember somewhere or someone I was with, and then I engage with that suffering of the absence of that. Or I may go to the future and idealize the future and get melancholic also because of that. So melancholy being a thought of something's missing. So the tendency to see something's missing for force is not a feeling, and it's also not a sensation. It's actually technically a thought, and it's the fixation. And it's useful to know it's a thought and not other thing, because then we know that we need to deconstruct that thought with mental strategies, not with emotional work or instinctual work. Right? That is method, in my view. This is useful. Then stinginess for fives, which is like controlling resources. I'll control time, space, energy, and I don't want that to be consumed by other people, and I'll be just protective of those things, and I won't give those resources easily to others. I'll protect them. And then cowardice for sixes, like asking questions, doubting, and also making sure that I test and test again and rehearse and ask a second or third person, and procrastination. That comes from the fixation of cowardice. And finally, planning for sevens, which is planning for, like David Daniels used to say, planning for pleasurable, positive things, possibilities. PPPP. Planning for pleasurable, positive possibilities. And I'm sorry if I'm making mistakes in my English here, as always. Now I don't have B to teach me the best English, but I think you get what I'm saying. So planning is not a formal kind of planning. It's more like thinking of different good possibilities so that I don't get limited by one only, right? And the fixations are like, they are the result of the loss of touch with the holy idea. So one of the holy ideas for sevens is plan, or holy plan, the plan of life for me, what life brings me. I stop trusting that if I'm a seven and I go to my own planning, because the plan of life isn't good. So I will do my own planning so that I don't suffer, because I don't trust that suffering will play a role in my development. And maybe I'll develop faster if I engage with that when it happens. And suffering will not be eternal. And here's yet another thing that is important to do when we do mental work, considering the Enneagram. It's that we have limiting beliefs. Like, I won't go through all nine, but just so that you get the picture. Sevens have a limiting belief that suffering will never end if I get in touch with it. If I connect suffering, it will be endless. And that is not true, and it's a limiting belief. So suffering is something that I can get in touch with, and if I do good work in processing that, it will go away. So we need to confront those limiting beliefs. And there are several limiting beliefs for each of the nine types that are complementary to the fixations here. And it's useful to think of those limiting beliefs. Now, paradigms that each of us have and each type has, we may have paradigms regardless of our types, like a political paradigm, or a paradigm on how to raise our kids, or what would be my role here in my intimate relationship. We may have paradigms about friendship, and paradigms sometimes are influenced by our instincts too, not only the thoughts. Like, for instance, social repressed people may have a paradigm that friendship is not that easy, and I'm not here to build friendships, and more. So that is a possibility. But paradigms are usually something that comes from the head center. It's like a limited way of seeing life. And I start believing only that slice of reality. And I don't consider other possibilities and other points of view, right? And by the way, not knowing that there are nine types is not seeing the whole of reality of people. And then having prejudice with one or two types and thinking that there are some types that are better, that is all a limited use of the head, right? So get out of that. If you want to really develop mentally, you need to re-examine your paradigms, break away from the paradigms and the limiting beliefs. So another thing I want to say is that when we connect to the holy ideas, we necessarily connect to the very opposite of those limiting beliefs, the fixation and paradigms that we use to believe in so much. So it's the healing of that cognitive mistake, or those cognitive mistakes that have been long held by us as truth. So we now see that I was wrong. We were wrong, and now we are seeing reality through the lens of the holy ideas. And that is when a big revolution in the use of the head happens. It's when we go to the highest possible use of the brain. And that is, I don't try to have thoughts of myself. I just open my mind completely to receiving information of this global brain, or if you wish, by God's mind, of all that has been thought for us. We have been thought of, like who we are. So we find out who we are. And it's called also remembering, remembrance, meaning, now I remember, I had forgotten, as in I had numbed out my memory of who I really am. And I started believing in this thing that I'm not, called personality. Personality is what I'm not and not what I am. So bear that in mind always, never forget this. And so finally, I want to say that when we do mental work, we need to focus a lot in getting out of that box called fixation. And the question now, I explained a little bit of the fixations, and we had other episodes we did that. But now it's the time to ask the question, how? How can we do that? Again, if it's a mental thing, we need to use mental methods. So you need to bring in new affirmations that are useful for you to break away from the fixation of our type. So I'll give one or two examples here. Imagine that one affirmation for sevens is invite suffering in so that it can go away eventually. Like, or for sevens, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. Right? So these are affirmations that are shocking to the head system in us, to the those beliefs and paradigms, and more specifically to the fixation of planning for sevens. And you can come up with affirmations for your own type. Personally, I don't like affirmations as much when it comes to the heart center. They may be good for some people like them more, others don't. It's a little bit type related also, I think. But they are even better, in my view, when it comes to the head center in all of us. Because then if the affirmations are things that go completely against our normal ways of thinking, then it's great because we stop just going along with that fixation. Another example, an eight saying, vengeance is like taking poison and expecting the other person to die. So that is nice. Another way of working with your fixation is by like holding on the wall a sign with a very short word or an emoticon from the internet showing something completely new that is not what you are really about. So imagine an eight having the sign like thumbs up, like, yeah, okay, I'm okay with that, instead of no, which is the more like common stance that eights take right away without thinking, right? More mechanically. So what if you try to be very positive and say yes to things? And by the way, what if you can play a completely different role in a team that you participate in, or that you can say new things and have a completely different approach to people, life, and processes? That is brilliant in terms of development. But then you can ask, why would I do that? Because I'm very successful in my way, my particular way of thinking. Well, you may be successful and get results in life, but if your commitment is with your inner development, doing something different is important in itself, regardless of the results. So daring to be different is what is important to develop And you shouldn't be, in this case, as concerned with the results you're going to have, because the result will come from being different, as in a result of not staying stuck in the limiting use of the head, right? And also another way of working with the head center and those beliefs and the fixation is by using methodologies like NLP, transpersonal analysis, sometimes hypnosis, and some other techniques, cognitive behavioral therapy, that are more mental, designed to break away from some behaviors, and in another higher neurological level, as it's called in NLP, you can go to beliefs, then you can go to values, then you can go even to higher levels. So the thing is, there are methods that work very well and lines of work that work very well for the head center. And now I'm going to say something a little bit controversial, but I am going to say I like to say what I think. I don't think that these methods that I mentioned, NLP or cognitive behavioral therapy, are as good when it comes to doing emotional work and other kinds of work. So I don't like them at all for hard work. But I think they are wise. They are practical when it comes to doing mental work. So bear this in mind as one last comment about all this from me. When we do mental work, don't try to process that with a lot of feelings at all. Get out of your heart to do mental work. Just try to trick your mind, to fool your mind. Try to be like a trickster of your mind, and do it quickly. Don't engage too much in conversations with the mind. Perhaps the emotional work on ourselves takes more time, literally, because we need to process emotions and feel all the feelings. But head work is a lot like doing a lot of a different movement and activating the brain. Now, I don't want to finish this without mentioning one thing that I believe to be the greatest way of working on the head center. And this comes straight from Gurdjieff. It's the Gurdjieff movements and also dances. He created a set of a very big set of physical exercises that are different from everything else because they don't follow the linear way of thinking. And in order to do them well, we need to be present, grounded, and break away from any Cartesian linear way of thinking and just trust the process without trying to think with the lower brain. So I don't know anything better than that, really, in case you want to check that out. Now, that is it for this theme, but today I want, as a surprise, testing this creative thinking here, I want to do a top five. Remember, we used to have more top fives here on our podcast, and we haven't been doing them lately. Yeah, I wonder if we should go back or not. Do you like it or not? So I'll do a top five, but B isn't here. So I have chosen a top five that is about B. Ah, so I'll be very nice with you, B. I know that you'll most probably copy me, and when you do a podcast yourself, you're going to do something like I'm going to do, but see, I'm going to be very nice with you. So now it's time for our top five, and our top five today is what I consider to be the top five most interesting things about B. Chestnut. Interesting as in... Wow, it's interesting. Like, it's different, and I'm a bit surprised. Now, I don't think there are many surprises I have with my friend B, but they have surprised me when I started observing those things in the beginning. So, top five. So, what is my five here? interesting thing that I noticed about B. Yeah, I'm taking advantage of the fact that she isn't here to talk about her. You know, we have this banter here on our podcast. I don't know if you like it or not. Many people say that they like it, so I'm going with it, and I'll take advantage of the fact that she isn't here today. Haha. So number five, I think it's super interesting for me to see how B is disciplined. Although she might be feeling this or that, have her particular mood of the day, she doesn't lose her discipline. It's amazing. It's much more than I have. Discipline for things like, I'll run every day for this amount of time and this time of the day, and I plan for that. And I am going to do these things today, and I'm really going to do them. Maybe she's using both wings, 1 and 3, and those help her. But she has her times, like reading time, or now it's time for my meals, or it's time to just watch something on TV. But she's so much more productive than I am because she's more disciplined. And I do think it has to do with her high self-preservation instinct, while mine is my lowest, right? But this is my five. So number four, B, what is the number four interesting thing that I see in B Chestnut? Well, it's the amount of preparation for things. She's a hard type, but believe me, she prepares for things way more than I do as a head type myself. Also about the instinct here, the self-pres and self-pres repressed, perhaps, but not only that, it's also B. You know, B likes to prepare and to rehearse. Like, we've done a course multiple times, and I really mean like dozens and dozens of times, and she needs to prepare again for that and always have an outline for the course that is very detailed, while for me, it can be very generic, or we can adapt as we go. It's a bit easier for me to do that, and it's super interesting for me to see how much B prepares for things. Of course, that has a very good side. She's usually more prepared for everything. But at the same time, it's not as easy for B to just go with the flow of what's happening because of her preparation, right? She's very good on this now, too. I think it would be impossible not to train herself on that working with me. But at the same time, she does this big amount of preparation that was very curious for me in the beginning. So again, talking about B here, my number three is how fast emotions can change for B. And this is actually not B. I had to learn that this is for all heart types. But it's just so curious for me as a non-heart type. It's like B is upset with something, and then all of a sudden she processes the emotion, and then the emotion goes and changes, and she says it's just an emotion, it's just the nature of it, and now it changed. And for me, I'm like, wow, because I can stay with that emotion because maybe I don't process it as competently, and then it can stay for way longer. So I think it's super interesting how B have emotions that change, usually in a very positive way, but sometimes in what she says are challenging ways too. Now, number two here, so much energy. Oh my God, B Chestnut has so much energy, and that drives me crazy at times as a type five. No, she doesn't stop. I think she has more energy than a 3, sometimes more than an 8. It's not intensity, because her, you know, that comes more from the sexual instinct, which is not B's dominant, but it's a lot of energy. Like, she may not stop. She likes chilling out, but usually she doesn't have much time for that. And she's always being engaged with doing things and being productive, and she doesn't need to sleep that much. Even she might not agree with what I'm saying, but maybe she talks about that another time. But definitely I have more of a need to sleep than she does. When we travel, like, she wants to go over hours talking about work and more, and then meet very early for breakfast and keep talking and more. So it's not only for relationship and talks, though. It's energy for everything. And I don't know if it's a two thing or not, but B doesn't feel tired very easily. I think that twos at times with the defense mechanism of repression may repress tiredness itself. They don't admit that they are feeling tired because pride sometimes doesn't allow them to feel like that, right? So I see that in other twos. Anyway, B is has a lot of energy. Now, what is my number one interesting thing for my business partner and friend B Chestnut? Well, it must be something about B's relationship with food, of course. So whoever really knows B knows that her relationship with food is a very strong one and very particular one. That's, I think, how her self-preservation dominant instinct shows up, plays out in her the most. It's like I can't really understand much how B can, right after having breakfast and feeling full, start thinking about lunch and then about dinner and tomorrow. And so much attention goes to that. And then dinner with B Chestnut is an event because it takes a lot of time, and it's like negotiating more space to, in the stomach, to have that last bite, and then ordering dessert. One day her friends did a song for her in celebration of a birthday for her. And they made a song based in Let It Be. And then they said, there will be dessert, this is B. So that you can have an idea of the interesting things about B. B, I love you. So it's not that I'm just teasing you as a friend, okay? Don't be mad at me. You are great, absolutely great. And okay with me if you want to tease me another time. Okay? So I thought this could be funny. I hope you have enjoyed also the top 5. And stay tuned on Enneagram 2.0 podcast, the place where we talk about all things Enneagram.